Harry Clark is quite a character, an American from the Midwest who moves to New York, reinvents himself as a Londoner, and then embarks on a series of wild adventures. He's the title character of David Cale's new one-man play, which is on stage at the Vineyard Theater on East 15th Street. Its run has just been extended for a third time until December 23rd. And it's also being recorded by Audible, where it'll be available to subscribers early next year. It's directed by Lee Silverman and stars Billy Crudup, and I'm delighted to welcome both of them back to our show, along with playwright David Cale. Hello.
Hello.
David, aren't you an actor as well as a playwright?
I am, sometimes, yes.
And you've appeared in things that you have written in the past, like Lillian. You won an Obie for that. We heard part of that on This American Life. Did you write this play for yourself?
Initially, I thought it would be something I would perform. I thought it was interesting initially that I write something that questioned whether I was actually English. And I tried it out in Pittsburgh at the Andy Warhol Museum. And then I thought two things: that someone else could more fully realize this and go deeper with it, and also that Philip, the central character, is not English. And I'm missing a whole other level of depth and poignance by playing this part, that it should be played by an American. It's I'm dodging.
Well, haven't you been living here for a while? Aren't you almost an American now?
Yes, I'm a demi-American.
So how did you come to choose Billy, other than the fact that he does accents incredibly well?
Thank you.
I wanted Billy.
Had you worked with him before?
No, but I first saw Billy in Alison MacLean's film, Jesus is Son, and I loved him in that, and I've been seeing him in things ever since. And I saw most recently, Waiting for Godot 3 times, and I was so dazzled by him, and I wanted him to be Philip.
And I remember Harry. You, Billy, in The Coast of Utopia, which got you a Tony. You've been on Broadway several times. You've starred dozens of films. Is this your first solo show?
Yes, it is, definitely.
But not the first show you've done at the Vineyard.
The third show that I've done at the Vineyard. It was the first show that I did in New York City when I was out of graduate school, was at the Vineyard Theater. It was a play called America Dreaming by Chiori Miyagawa that Michael Mayer directed. And so the Vineyard Theater has always occupied a pretty romantic portion of my early memories of acting in New York.
What's the appeal of performing in a small off-Broadway house? Is it getting back to the essentials of acting, or being really close to the audience?
You know, truthfully, it's the material. So in a smaller theater, you're afforded the opportunity to give playwrights a chance to explore their new material in New York. It's not necessarily a money-making mechanism designed to bring something into New York as a way to generate revenue. It's a way of exploring what New York artists have to offer in front of them, in front of New York audiences. And that's a pretty impressive feat, and you need to have a small audience for that.
It keeps on being extended.
Yes, I'm thrilled about that. I have a feeling the overhead is not very high, so the sets don't move.
It's barely a set. Lee, you've directed Broadway shows like Violet, Chinglish, Well, in addition to many off-Broadway productions. How'd you come to this project?
I've just been a crazy fan of David Cale's for many, many years, and he and I have worked together with him as both the writer and the performer, and he sent me this piece, and I loved it, and I thought it was an extraordinary piece of writing, unbelievably theatrical, and that there was a tremendous amount of incredible characters to mine. And we talked about who on earth could possibly be this amazing combination of people and things and hold an audience rapt, and truly the only person that
available.
David that David and I could think of was Billy. And and so that's how it all came together.
Do solo shows like this present particular challenges for a director? Because actors have often told me that part of acting is reacting.
It's true. And I think with solo shows, the conflict is between the performer and themselves. So the actual act of storytelling is where the theater comes from. It's where the conflict comes from. And directing an actor to mine that conflict and figuring out what the conflict is so fundamental to the muscle of the piece that, and yet it's the piece that you can't do until you have an audience there. So in fact, the real work of the piece, sure, the learning of the lines, the character, the accent work, all of that's really important and foundational, but the real work of the piece doesn't come until the first preview when an audience is there. And that is a terrifying thing for an actor to agree to commit to.
With a single actor on stage, is it a problem how to create a sense of movement and action?
It's the joy of it, actually, is that there's so much nuance that when you have a bigger piece that has more people and more moving parts and lots of scenery, the spectacle is the thing. With this, when Billy moves his hand, it's an event. When he's actually stays completely still for the first 20 pages of the show. And when he makes that first step, it is like, it changes everything about the nature of the storytelling. And that is actually an incredibly satisfying thing to start to work out. And someone said to me the other night after seeing the show, they couldn't believe how much chemistry there was between two of the characters. And I said, well, they were both Billy.
Exactly.
But Billy is it more about the relationship between the actor and the audience?
It is a lot about that. But I think Lee sort of said, particularly with this piece, that there is a confessional aspect to it. And there's a part of it, an aspect to it, that is an imagined aspect that Philip is working through his own humanity.
We should point out that this character's name is really Philip Brugelstein, but he has reinvented himself as Harry Clark.
Yeah, for some reason, and I probably often or most often refer to the character as Philip, because that was the part that most spoke to me, this sort of fractured young man or boy who was not able to understand certain things about himself or feel comfortable about himself, that developed this kind of fantasy life to protect and preserve that.
When he was a kid?
When he was a kid.
What kind of childhood has he had?
Apparently a difficult one. I think that's something everybody can relate to in many ways, is how we fit into different environments as we're growing up, some that are hostile, some that are accommodating. And Phillips is a pretty extreme example of someone who has been treated unfairly.
Well, he's reinvented himself as a Londoner, pretending to be from a place he hasn't even visited.
Well, sure. I can't explain that part, David. On to you.
Well, actually, we're going to take a little break, and we will come back to that. My guests are Billy Crudup, who stars as Philip Brugelstein, Harry Clark in Harry Clark, now at the Vineyard and running until December 23rd. Lee Silverman, who directed it, and David Kale, who wrote it. Stay with us for more. We are back with three important people in the production of a new play called Harry Clark, and they are David Kale, who wrote it, Billy Crudup, who stars in it, and Lee Silverman, who directed it. When he grows up, Philip moves to New York and is able to present himself as Harry full-time. Does Harry have a completely different personality than Philip?
Harry is quite opposite in many ways to the way Philip was as a child. He's very outgoing. He's very confident. He's very outrageous. He's not inhibited in the world in the way that Philip was as a child, particularly a very timid, shy
kid. Is this an extreme version of what many people do? They move to a large city like New York because it gives them the freedom to change their identity, even if they don't go as far as changing their names.
When I first moved here, I was the mail boy at the Australian consulate, and there were a lot of...
How do you get that job?
That's a very difficult job to get, Billy.
Did you have to say good day to everybody?
Yes, I did.
You delivered the mail?
Convincingly. But there were a lot of women, particularly women, and there were men too, that I felt like they had a past that wasn't coming with them to New York, let's say, informationally. I felt there was a level of quite overt reinvention. And I that's very intriguing to me, the whole idea of moving to another place. And I mean, I've kind of moved to another place and changed my life dramatically. But But it's so that the reinvention is always.
Now, this is a complicated story, so stop me if you feel I'm just getting too close to any spoilers. There
stop.
Was one review. There was one review that I was kind of shocked by because it kind of even revealed the ending. Uh-huh. I don't do that sort of thing. Yeah. But as Harry becomes more involved with various members of a wealthy family, the Schmidts, how does he? I mean, Philip as Harry. How does he meet them?
Well, there's a chance encounter. That's the way that Philip recounts it. It's a little bit difficult to tell if he's completely reliable sometimes in his own memory of things and his own conjuring of past events. But certainly the way that he remembers it is he was having a strange period in his life, and he saw a man who was walking in front of him on the street in New York, encountered him by happenstance, and decided that he would follow him and see what his life was like.
And we get this story, which includes lots of twists and turns, from Harry's point of view. You go through a wide range of accents, Midwestern, British upper class, Cockney, New York Jewish. Are you, or should we say Harry, playing all the different characters?
Philip, I think, learned very early on to accommodate himself to the environment that he's living in. And he, at the same time, had this fantasy of living a different kind of life. So he watched a lot of movies. This is where part of his affection for impersonations, I think, probably came from, was the capacity to be all these different kinds of people. And so he becomes quite facile at that, I think, probably because out of emotional necessity and because that's how he spends his time.
But do you as an actor relate to that?
Well,
because you become different characters with different
accents?
To
a great extent, absolutely. Mostly I do it for money. Philip's giving it away for free. I would tell him, don't do that. That's a poor choice in an acting career. But I do relate to trying to accommodate to different kinds of storytelling. And I think that's what Philip does. So when he ingratiates himself to the family, the Schmidt family, he's able to do it by following their leads.
Because they are attracted to him because he's British.
And he watches people. He even mentions, one description about himself is he's sort of extremely astute about people emotionally. So he's aware of what I think people need in their lives and would welcome in their lives and would impress them.
I think some kind of kids that are knocked around are very hypersensitive to undercurrents and people's natures and what's bubbling up in people. In
but
a
he
way
grew
that
up in a farm in the Midwest. Would it have been different if he'd grown up on a farm in England?
Yeah, but I think he had a very abusive... I mean, you see a glimpse of it in the show. A very abusive father. And just ostracized by other kids. I think it's heightened his his perceptions of people and what's going on with them are they're heightened in a way.
But he's like a self-taught actor.
But he's always I was sort of intrigued by the idea, or kind of touched by the idea, of this kid in the Midwest who could, for whatever reason, do a really good English accent. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really kind of endearing. But he's almost like channels people. He's very good at conjuring people.
Well, and the world really makes sense to him through the lens of thrillers and through the lens of movies.
Well, the play has been compared to The Talented Mr. Ripley by Patricia Highsmith.
Yeah. I mean, I think the play, yeah. And I think it functionally works as a thriller on stage. And I think Philip sees himself as the world only makes sense to him when he sees himself as the lead in a thriller. And so he creates an environment and a world for himself that makes sense in this way. And so although thrillers are both referenced in the play, I think they're very important to David. And Philip is a lover of film noir and thriller. The play also in its form is doing exactly that, which is it makes you feel uneasy and you start not trusting what you're seeing and hearing and feeling as it goes along. And this character becomes, I think, increasingly more unreliable. And as you're enjoying it and leaning into the story and getting excited about it, it also is shifting in ways that you don't expect.
And there are ways that you clue people in to his being unreliable.
Yeah.
Which is usually a literary device. I think of books like The Good Soldier.
Yes, and I think in this case, it's the performance. It's what Billy brings, which is that it's an unending amount of charm and charisma while simultaneously telling you things that you're like, wait, did he just, what was, what? So that you're constantly, and then I think we're trying to support him in the production with the lights and the sound, that we're constantly shifting the air and changing the lights.
And if you're playing a character that lies all the time in front of, and you're telling the story of how you lie in your life, and then you leave a brief moment at any crucial time in the story to look at the audience and give them a chance to process whether or not what you just said is accurate, that really sets them on their heels.
Lee, the play is performed on an almost bare stage, just a chair and a table for a set. How do you create all the different locales, from a farm to a boat to various New York apartments?
It's actually, the setting is a deck, a wooden deck that's lit both from underneath and behind with a scrim. And it's a space that feels both like you walk in and you think, oh, I'm on the deck of a boat, or I'm on a porch, or a patio. And as the play goes on, the space actually does transform through light, and you start to see things behind the scrim. You get a sense that the world is not what it seems to be, which I think design-wise is supports what the text is doing and what Billy's performance is doing.
In his rave review in the New York Times, Jesse Green implied that Billy is to some degree doing an impersonation of you, David. Do you see that?
I haven't
seen
that.
We don't
read
it. I know actors never read.
Oh,
reviews.
Sure. I skim just to see how much I suck. But yeah, if it's good, I usually block it out. But
I will only take in the negative.
Yeah, me too.
And I'll never forget it.
I know. That's all my
brain
has space for.
My childhood, the rest of my life.
If you're praised for delivering a line, you can never say that line the same way.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's interesting that he would say it, because he's probably seen quite a bit of David's work.
But all the reviews have been great.
They've been, well.
I'm telling you, in case you haven't seen them. They've all been great.
Very positive.
I'm really thrilled about that.
Well, don't people tell you that, David?
Yeah.
Even if you say, I'm not going to read
they
it.
Do.
I mean, you know, if people don't like it, in who are writing about it, without anybody saying anything.
No one looks you in the eye for about a month.
Yeah. Yes, and you're back to having no friends.
Right. There's no call opening night or the next day.
It's like you can feel it when you don't need to literally know what anybody said. You can just feel it.
You have created a character who at 8 years old says things like, don't get your knickers in a twist. And one of the, we were talking about the unreliable narrator. Some of the most shocking details are done almost as throwaway lines.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
You wrote them that way.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, also the thing about this, for me, that was also really interesting. No one has ever performed a show of mine, a solo show of mine, except Billy's the first person. And I've never sat in the audience and watched something I've written. And I write very intuitively and instinctively. And then to hear it from a whole different perspective was, you know, sometimes I don't know what I've written.
Well, you wrote it with your own voice in mind.
Yeah.
And now you're hearing somebody else hearing it in a very different way.
It's really different. And also because there's things in there I wasn't aware of that Billy has mined and brought out. And so there's whole other levels and angles and perspectives on it that they're in there, but I just wasn't aware of it. And he's sort of he's like, the tree is blooming.
That's why you hire good actors. We don't have much time, but Lee, does a theater like The Vineyard get a different audience than a big Broadway house?
I think that there's, in off-Broadway in general, I think there's more New Yorkers, and in Broadway there's more tourists, but I think that the audience that comes to The Vineyard is adventurous and rapt and smart, and it's been really exciting.
And might there be another extension?
Fingers crossed.
Harry Clark is at the Vineyard Theater, 108 East 15th Street. The run has just been extended until December 23rd. And my great thanks to its writer, David Kale, its star, Billy Crudup, and its director, Lee Silverman, for being on our show today.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.